Compass Media Networks. This is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Soaking South Carolina. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Tuesday, October 6th. Glad you're with us. Here's what's up this hour.
The record-setting rain is expected to ease up today in South Carolina, but flooding problems remain. Meanwhile, thousands are without power or drinking water, plus the death toll is inched up.
One crew member has been confirmed dead as rescuers search for survivors from a sunken cargo ship that went down last week off the Bahamas in Hurricane Joaquin.
The U.S. military has changed its tune about how a charity hospital in Afghanistan came under deadly fire over the weekend.
And the new surveys that spell trouble for Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton.
So these new polls are showing that Bernie Sanders is in fact viewed much more positively by voters in both parties than Hillary Clinton is in these two early states of Iowa and New Hampshire. And he's also doing better in these head-to-head matchups with potential Republican candidates.
Wall Street Journal reporter Rebecca Ballhouse on the numbers in Iowa and New Hampshire. She's here in about 25 minutes. The death toll from historic floodwaters in South Carolina has now reached 11. Governor Nikki Haley warned residents to remain on alert as rain continued to fall in some of the hardest hit areas, including the state capital of Columbia, which saw its wettest days on record over the weekend.
There will be some evacuations. We're looking at places like King Street and those, so you'll see that throughout the day that we're going to evacuate as we see that water moves down.
67-year-old Columbia resident Tommy Rollins, by the way, said he went to bed Saturday night after watching football and woke up at 4 a.m. Sunday to the sound of rushing water. He said in 30 minutes, the water had pushed through his hardwood floors and was 4 feet deep. Says he and his wife packed a quick bag and stepped off their porch into chest-deep rushing water before being brought to safety in a neighbor's boat. Wow. More than 2 feet of rain has fallen in the past few days in parts of South Carolina, and moderate to heavy rain persisted yesterday. The rain is expected to taper off today. The severe weather, by the way, also blamed for 2 deaths in North Carolina. Rescue officials are still hoping they'll find survivors from a cargo ship that sank 6 days ago near the Bahamas in Hurricane Joaquin. As of this morning, one presumed crew member has been confirmed dead. The Coast Guard said yesterday that the ship went down in the brutal seas and high winds of the big storm. Coast Guard Captain Mark Fedor said the 800-foot container ship El Faro had 33 crew aboard, 28 were Americans. Lori Babalot, mother of crew member Danielle Randolph, read an email she received from her daughter the morning the ship disappeared in the Bermuda Triangle.
We are heading straight into it, Category 3. Last we checked, winds are super bad and seas are not great. Love to everyone.
Rescuers are now targeting two debris fields about 60 miles apart. El Faro was caught in Hurricane Joaquin last week while traveling from Florida to Puerto Rico. The last communication came Thursday. The hurricane at that point was a Category 4 with winds in excess of 120 miles an hour, churning waves as high as 50 feet. It's not clear why the ship ventured into such heavy weather. The story about the Doctors Without Borders hospital hit by airstrikes in the Afghan city of Kunduz has changed. The U.S. commander in Afghanistan, General John Campbell, said yesterday that Afghan forces had requested the airstrike that destroyed the facility, conceding that the military had incorrectly reported at first that the response was to protect U.S. troops said to be under direct threat. 22 people were killed in Saturday's incident, including patients and hospital staff members. It's not clear who called in the strike and whether anyone knew they were unleashing a sustained air attack on a hospital. More from USA Today military writer Jim Michaels on the T-Mobile hotline. Jim, what do we have here?
Earlier they had said that it was a U.S. request in order to protect U.S. troops. Now they've said that it was an Afghan request that was made to U.S. authorities who then conducted the airstrike in question. It's a slight change, and again, the essence of it being that the request came initially from Afghan forces in Kunduz.
Afghanistan, are they saying the same thing?
They haven't really spoken publicly about this specific issue yet, and they haven't made a lot of official comments either, which raises kind of an interesting point, because again, the previous president, President Hamid Karzai, was very, very critical of U.S., the U.S. military in his country, particularly in his last couple of years in office, would regularly criticize the U.S. for collateral damage and so forth. President Ghani, who succeeded him, has taken a much more measured approach. He's been more welcoming of U.S. forces, and so has, of course, expressed condolences about what happened, and the U.S. military has said it's going to do a full investigation and so forth. So it's a very different approach that these two governments took.
Right. All right. So this tends to, or what this appears to, shift blame at least a little bit off the U.S., or does it not even matter?
You know, it's very incremental. I think it raises a number of questions. The U.S. is very very particular in how it conducts airstrikes. Now, it's conducting, you know, much, much fewer than it did in the past. It's letting the Afghans do most of the fighting. The U.S. has advisors with Afghan forces. It will generally only, with a few exceptions, use an airstrike when U.S. or coalition forces are in danger. So it raises the question why they responded to this particular strike. But to answer your question, yes, it certainly raises a host of new questions when it was the Afghans who requested the airstrike, not the U.S. Attempting to protect coalition forces directly.
We're speaking with Jim Michaels, national security writer at USA Today. He's got a piece about that hospital being struck in the Afghan town of Kunduz. So Doctors Without Borders says everyone knew that the hospital was there. What does that matter in this particular situation?
If they did know, if it was on a map as identified as a hospital and so forth, then obviously pilots would be aware of it, people calling in airstrikes would be aware of it and so forth. The U.S. military has not commented on any of the details pending this investigation that they're conducting. So we don't know the truth of that claim. But obviously, if it was known and if the information was promulgated, you'd want to stay away from that. You wouldn't want it as a free fire zone or anything like that. But having said that, obviously the situation on the ground is very chaotic. There's, you know, trying to separate friend from foe. The Taliban do generally mingle among civilians. The implication being, and in fact, General Campbell said the Taliban were doing that, hold up in the city, mingling with the civilians in an effort to sort of protect themselves. And so it was a chaotic environment. It is not clear if the coalition and the Afghans knew exactly where the hospital was.
Thanks, Jim. Jim Michaels, military writer at USA Today. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. You're results-driven and you're ambitious. You've established yourself professionally, and now you're looking for more. Take the next step in your entrepreneurial journey with Edible Arrangements, the brand that revolutionized gifting with handcrafted fruit arrangements and gourmet chocolate-covered fruit, now also offers delicious everyday treats like smoothies, fruit salads, and parfaits. As an Edible Arrangements franchisee, you get access to an established brand with 16 years of growth, over 80% brand recognition, and 1,200 locations worldwide. You'll benefit from know-how, support, and millions of visitors to the Edible Arrangements e-commerce platform. Discover why Entrepreneur Magazine named Edible Arrangements a top franchise and among their best of the best for 2015. Start your journey to sweet success as an Edible Arrangements franchise owner. Call 1-888-727-4258 or go to edible.com. That's 1-888-727-4258 or edible.com. Thanks for being with us. Good Tuesday morning. An American Airlines flight headed from Boston to Phoenix had to be diverted to Syracuse, New York, after the pilot died at the controls. Captain Michael Johnston suffered a heart attack, according to his wife, Betty Jean. She told NBC News that the 57-year-old veteran pilot had a double bypass heart surgery in 2006, but had otherwise been in good health, adding that the airline required him to have a physical every 6 months to continue piloting. Here's what the communication sounded like, by the way.
Syracuse, American 550s out of 15,000 for 5,000. Medical emergency. Captain is incapacitated. Request handling for runway 10 landing.
American 550, Syracuse approach, roger.
The co-pilot took the controls to land the plane in New York. There were 147 passengers on board, along with five crew members. The passengers were unaware of the medical issue until a new crew came on board in Syracuse. Mrs. Johnston said the couple would have celebrated their 35th wedding anniversary next week. They have eight kids, ages 12 to 34. It's 20 minutes after the hour. On This Morning, Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, after a week of steady rain, thousands of South Carolina residents face the prospect of going days without running water, despite waterlogged dams overflowing and floodwaters rolling down to the coast. This man says he used his own boat to help with rescues.
I actually was stomping on the roof and listening to see if anybody thumped back. We found a note that said, "We are in the attic."
Even though Hurricane Joaquin missed the East Coast, it fueled what weather experts called a fire hose of tropical moisture that aimed directly at the state. A solid week of rainfall has killed at least 11 people in South Carolina and two in North Carolina and sent about 1,000 to shelters. U.S. industries as diverse as aerospace, agriculture, and apparel are praising a 12-nation Pacific trade deal struck yesterday, while pharmaceutical makers, tobacco companies, and others are criticizing the pact for falling short. Completion of the Trans-Pacific Partnership marks a victory for President Obama. White House spokesman Josh Earnest.
This agreement also includes the strongest environmental protections and does more to raise environmental standards than any trade agreement in history.
White House officials also say the deal opens new markets to U.S. products and sets high standards for protecting workers. California will become the fifth U.S. state to allow terminally ill patients to legally end their lives using doctor-prescribed drugs after Governor Jerry Brown signed one of the most emotionally charged bills of the year. Brown, a lifelong Catholic and former Jesuit seminarian, announced he had signed the legislation after thoroughly considering all opinions and discussing the issue with many people, including a Catholic bishop and two of Brown's doctors. If you're ever faced with a charging grizzly bear, remember this tip: shove your arm down its throat. That's what a 26-year-old bow hunter from Montana did when he was attacked by a 400-pound grizzly. He says while being mauled, he remembered a story he read in a magazine about how large animals have bad gag reflexes. So he shoved his arm down the bear's throat. The bear let go and left. The man escaped with non-life-threatening head and leg wounds.
A little counterintuitive because you're bringing the teeth closer to your head as you reach down the bear's throat.
I don't think I could do this.
Woo. Well, you know, to be fair, him and his brother both said you must have bear spray, which works. But they were in a mild blizzard, and it was so windy
right.
that it wouldn't have worked. And I guess having to reach in for your pockets, he walked up on the bear unexpectedly. So, woo, wow, yeah. What did that article say? Oh yeah, reach down the bear's throat. Who thinks of that? 23 minutes after the hour.
In 2001, Vonage revolutionized home phone service with voice over internet. After such a colossal breakthrough, who would have objected if Vonage said, "Enjoy better, world. Vonage will be spending some me time at the spa." But the thing about better is, there's always more better. So today, Vonage is not at the spa having its trouble area worked on by a masseuse named Moonshadow, but with its nose to the grindstone, transforming communications for your business by making it better. With a cloud-based infrastructure that grows as your business grows. Seamless mobility between all devices so you don't miss that important call, even while Moonshadow is walking down your spine. And all for less than you think. So while you're getting your mani-pedi, Vonage's toenails remain a complete disaster. Because Vonage is still out there working to make more better. See how your business can get the better it deserves. Call Vonage at 1-800-5-VONAGE or go to Vonage.com. Vonage, the business of better.
Glad you're with us. Is this a theme at your small business? Lots of talk about promoting leadership in the workplace, but what about the followers? Most offices are populated with too many leaders and too few followers as a result. So Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Schellenbarger says now some employers are training people in followership. What does that involve? Sue, there are stereotypes.
Great. I mean, you're a sheep. You're a yes man.
Yeah.
You know, you're somebody who just hangs back all the time. This is not what it means to be a good follower. And that's part of the problem. And companies realize that employees need to work better on teams. They need to work better as telecommuters or in far-flung locations. And these are reasons that follower skills are more important than ever. What it means is taking responsibility for shared goals, being a self-starter, being self-motivated, and communicating well, and again, helping the boss meet shared goals. These skills are more important than ever, really, in the workplace today.
Is this, by the way, more popular in some industries than others, or is this kind of a national thing?
Well, I think it's the trainings are popping up in all kinds of companies, technical ones, manufacturing, consulting. I think it's pretty much cuts across all occupations. And one thing that trainers are finding is that people are actually relieved to know that it's okay to be a follower, that you're not falling short. I think it's kind of drummed into everyone that, oh, you must aspire to be a leader, you must look for leadership roles. Some people are, just as fine being a follower and maybe helping others and more of a on the down low and not taking such a high profile.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Shellenbarger. Her piece is called The Joy of Following, and we're talking about there being too many leaders, not enough followers in today's workplace. Did you talk to a company that's actually tried some of this where it's worked?
I definitely, Sandia National Lab said that training and followership as part of a Star Performers program went very well, that people gained confidence, people in the rank and file gained confidence. Another company, Consol Energy, said that having their Star Performers learn how to deliver criticism up the food chain, which is a good follower skill.
That has to be a skill that not many people have, you mentioned before, and that is being able to deliver criticism to your boss.
It's scary. I mean, the tendency is to shoot the messenger, right? So you have to take risks. I think one thing I learned reporting this story is that there are ways to do that tend to be more tactful and diplomatic than others, rather than saying, geez, boss, you really screwed up that time.
Yeah.
You can walk in and say, help me understand your thinking on this plan, to sell the company or whatever. And another technique, if you're really addressing something sensitive with the boss, is to ask for a separate time at a neutral location, go out for lunch maybe, and say, look, George, I really want to help you succeed, and I want to tell you how that speech you made yesterday was received by the rank and file. Mm. It didn't go over so well. You can kind of try to set the stage as being the boss's ally, and you're really trying to help.
Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Shellenbarger. Regarding leadership, by the way, as my dad says, the view never changes if you're not the lead dog on the sled team. 30 minutes now after the hour. Getting your mailing and shipping done can seem like a no-win situation. First, going to the post office takes up valuable time, and leasing a postage meter is expensive with multi-year commitments and hidden fees. Luckily, there's a better way. Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package right from your desk using your own computer and printer. Even get special postage discounts you can't find at the post office. Plus, Stamps.com is more powerful than a postage meter at just a fraction of the cost. You can save at least 50% compared to a postage meter, and you'll avoid those time-consuming trips to the post office. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use my last name, Deal, for this special offer. A 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer, including postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Deal. That's Stamps.com. Enter Deal.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday, October 6th. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. South Carolina flooding has now taken 11 lives. One body found so far in a rescue effort involving a missing cargo ship off the Bahamas. All-day breakfast begins at McDonald's today. And how about this? The owner of a reptile store in Ohio had to have a 125-pound python pried off of his head, neck, and torso. Yeah, he resumed breathing shortly after. Facebook plans to launch a satellite for internet service in Africa. Yanks and Strohs in a wild card game tonight. And a nominee for College Professor of the Year. Hear what he did. That story in about 20 minutes. The latest swing state polls show Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, at one point considered a shoo-in for her party's nomination, does lousy in matchups against several GOP rivals. Wall Street Journal reporter Rebecca Ballhaus has been looking at the data from Iowa and New Hampshire. Rebecca, give us the summary.
So these new polls are showing that Bernie Sanders is, in fact, viewed much more positively by voters in both parties than Hillary Clinton is in these two early states of Iowa and New Hampshire. And he's also doing better in these head-to-head matchups with potential Republican candidates. So Jeb Bush, Donald Trump, Carly Fiorina, he seems to be doing better than she is when matched with them.
Wow. All right. So between, say, Clinton and Sanders, the numbers look like what in Iowa and New Hampshire?
So both of them are doing very well with Democratic voters. But when you ask voters in both parties, a lot, 59% in, I believe, in Iowa view her unfavorably, while 35% view her favorably. For him, it's a much different matchup. He does more people view him favorably in that state than view him unfavorably.
Got it. Does that translate into primary votes among Democratic candidates?
Well, I mean, that really remains to be seen. But, you know, for the primary, they're both doing well with Democrats, so it's really hard to say. But it is interesting that these polls seem to sort of suggest that Bernie Sanders, a self-proclaimed socialist who's 73 years old, would be a stronger general election candidate, at least right now, than she seems to be.
Wow. All right. So how about on the Republican side? What's being said there?
So on the Republican side, we found that Donald Trump's lead has diminished, but he's still beating the rest of the field by 5 points in both New Hampshire and in Iowa. In Iowa, Ben Carson has the second place position, and he's still holding strong, while in New Hampshire, we saw that Carly Fiorina really surged. She went from 6% in a poll taken at the end of August to now 16%.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Rebecca Ballhouse. Her piece is about how in Iowa and New Hampshire, voters hold a dim view of Hillary Clinton, according to new polling. All right, so the Democratic Party, though, it has to be somewhat nervous or uneasy about Mr. Sanders being in the lead as a socialist?
I think that's definitely could be the case. The other thing we saw that was interesting is how much Joe Biden would eat into Hillary Clinton's lead if he joined the race. So the polls found that in Iowa, Hillary Clinton beat Bernie Sanders by 11 percentage points if he's not in the race. But if he does join the race, that lead narrows to just 5 points. And in New Hampshire, Bernie Sanders actually leads Hillary Clinton with 9 points. And if Joe Biden enters the race, his lead widens to 14 points. So that really shows, I think, how much more complicated it could get if the vice president decides to join.
Right. Are polls like these, Rebecca, ones that lead Biden supporters to push harder to get him into the race?
I think that's certainly true. We saw last week that the Journal had a story showing that some Clinton supporters are even already publicly defecting and saying if Joe Biden enters the race, I'll support him. I think there's a lot of nervousness to go around here in both parties about who the eventual nominee will be.
Wow. So do the numbers tend to lead candidates to do drastic things at this point of the campaign, or is it too early?
It's certainly still early, but, I mean, we're seeing a story every other day now about how Joe Biden seems to be leaning more and more into running a campaign. I think it certainly doesn't hurt when polls like this show how much he would disrupt the Democratic primary.
Thanks, Rebecca. It's Wall Street Journal reporter Rebecca Ballhouse from Washington. 21 minutes now before the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Good Tuesday morning. The next time you buy a home may be a little bit easier and less stressful. As you know, closing on a home can be a confusing and flustering experience, especially for first-time home buyers. But new rules, in effect as of yesterday, aim to simplify the process for you. Here's personal finance writer Janelle Marte at the Washington Post. Janelle, what should we know?
So there are two main changes that are happening as a part of the rules. The first part is that instead of getting 4 or 5 forms, people will now get 2 standardized forms that are supposed to be easier to understand. One, when you apply for the loan, which is called the loan estimate, and the goal for this is to make it easier for you to compare loans, different offers from multiple lenders, and then you're supposed to get a loan before closing. And the goal here is to help you know how much the loan has changed from your initial estimate. So it's the form you would use to look for things like if your closing costs increased dramatically or if there was a change to the interest rate. You basically want to look carefully for any surprises and avoid them as much as possible.
How much of this people failing to understand the loan process was in effect during the housing meltdown? I mean, did that get a lot of the blame? Because we've been issuing loans forever.
partly it did. You have to remember that some people were signing up for mortgages where the interest rate changed dramatically later on and they weren't prepared to pay that. This is also just general changes to help people avoid surprises where they come to closing day and they realize they have to pay more upfront than they thought they did. And that's why the second part of the rule is really important. And what it says is that home buyers will get 3 days to view the new documents or the latest documents before closing. Under previous rules, you could make a change on closing day and still have the sale go through.
We're speaking with Janelle Marte, personal finance writer at the Washington Post. Her piece is entitled, Home Loans About to Become Easier to Understand. This three-day window then essentially allows you to what? Catch your breath, go maybe talk things over with a spouse, crunch some more numbers, and then what? Are you entitled to bail out if you don't like something?
It does give you a chance to speak up if you don't like something and to make the change to the loan so you don't feel like you're pressured to sign something that you're not sure about.
It's sort of like reading the agreements when you sign up for a new app. Is it 9 pages and you just click agree? Right?
You actually read it now. And, you know, the things you want to look for, you just want to make sure you understand. You want to watch out for anything complicated like a prepayment penalty, or you want to make sure the total loan amount after interest is something you can afford and are comfortable with, that the rate is something you can pay. It could create more delays because if people find something that does need to be changed, you know, then you have to keep pushing back the three-day window and maybe start a new three-day window. But at the end of the day, it should be good for home buyers.
Thanks, Janelle. Janelle Marte, personal finance writer at The Washington Post. It is 14 minutes now before the hour on This Morning, America's First News. You always want to look great, but don't have the time or the patience to go shopping. With Trunk Club, you never have to set foot in the mall again. Trunk Club takes the hassle out of shopping by shipping you a trunk of clothes that fit perfectly and make you look like $1 million with all the new fall styles. At trunkclub.com/morning, all you have to do is answer simple questions about your style, preferences, and size, and then you are assigned an expert stylist. They curate clothes from the best premium brands, and you approve what you like. Just like that, a trunk arrives on your doorstep filled with hand-picked clothes that are perfect for you. Try them on, keep what you like, and easily return what you don't in their prepaid trunk. This is not a subscription service. You only pay for the clothes you keep. No hidden charges, just great clothes. And right now, their entire styling service is free. Even the shipping. You only pay for the clothes you keep. To take advantage, go to trunkclub.com/morning. One more time, that's trunkclub.com/morning for a trunk filled with clothes you'll love wearing. Time now for a small business update, and it's brought to you by Vonage. Vonage presents The Business of Better, featuring Vonage Visual Voicemail that delivers your voice messages to your email when you can't take the call. Vonage, the business of better. More and more older Americans are choosing a phased retirement that scales back work over a period of years instead of going cold turkey. The New York Times says some simply want to stay connected to their workplaces and colleagues, while others are seeking an improved work-life balance. With more time for involvement with their families and communities, others need to work or have to build up their nest eggs. 7 years ago, a guy named Steve Norwitz, who was then a 61-year-old executive at the mutual fund group T. Rowe Price, proposed a scaled-down work schedule that would reduce his duties. Instead of managing the media relations department as he once did, Mr. Norwitz now works on specific projects and takes 13 weeks off a year. He accepted a 25% pay cut in exchange for more personal time. Benefits of a phased retirement, by the way, sustained income, learning and social opportunities, and avoiding tensions at home that can arise from full-time retirement. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, it's proving difficult to get a straight answer about why a hospital in Afghanistan was bombed over the weekend. 2 days after the U.S. airstrike that destroyed a hospital in Afghanistan, the Pentagon now says the airstrike was called in by the Afghans themselves, not U.S. troops. U.S. General John Campbell says several investigations are underway.
If errors were committed, we'll acknowledge them. We'll hold those responsible accountable, and we'll take steps to ensure mistakes are not repeated.
10 patients and 12 staff members were killed at the hospital, which was run by the international medical charity Doctors Without Borders. U.S. officials say Russia has targeted Syrian rebel groups backed by the CIA in a string of airstrikes, leading the U.S. to conclude that it's an intentional effort by Moscow. The assessment, which is shared by commanders on the ground, has deepened U.S. anger at Moscow and sparked a debate over how the U.S. can come to the aid of its proxy forces without getting sucked deeper into a war. New government figures show deportations of immigrants in the U.S. illegally have declined for the third consecutive year. The figures show 231,000 people were deported in the year ending in September. That's the fewest number since 2006. October is National Bullying Prevention Month, and there's some good news to report. According to the Education Department, the rate of school bullying among school children aged 12 to 18 fell to 22% in 2013, down from a high of 32% in 2009. And 911 calls work best when they're not clogged up with non-emergencies, but many calls are. A new study from Google discovered some 30% of calls to 911 in San Francisco were accidental dials. The accidental dials, also known as butt dialing or pocket dialing, occur when you accidentally sit on your phone or bump it while it's in your pocket or handbag. The researchers recommend that the city streamline the callback process by either automating the voicemail message left by the dispatcher or sending an automated text to the caller.
Wow, 30%,
that's
3 out of 10?
Yep.
That's huge.
It is, and it's a big problem for a lot of cities.
Yeah, yeah, I can imagine.
Waste of time for the
dispatchers. Right, right. Oh, geez. Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Here's how important the wild card playoff game is tomorrow night for Cubs fans. When University of Illinois student Ben Larson found out that his midterm was scheduled for this Thursday, the day after the game, he emailed the professor begging to reschedule the exam. He wrote, quote, "I'll be perfectly blunt with you. My whole life, my family and I have been die-hard Cubs fans. Wednesday night will be the Cubs wild card game in Pittsburgh, and we were able to get tickets." He asks the professor to postpone the exam because he would not be able to make it back in time to take it. He says, "I understand your policy, but was possibly hoping you might have a soft spot for the Cubs." Surprisingly, the professor, named Dave, understood Mr. Larson's plight, replying to the email, quote, "If it were any other team, I would hesitate. But the universe gives Cubs fans only so many post-game seasons. They must be savored." Chicago at Pittsburgh tomorrow for a Game 1 showdown. First pitch just after 8 o'clock Eastern. By the way, for tonight, if you can't wait for baseball tomorrow, you got the Yankees and Stros. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. You're results-driven and you're ambitious. You've established yourself professionally and now you're looking for more. Take the next step in your entrepreneurial journey with Edible Arrangements, the brand that revolutionized gifting with handcrafted fruit arrangements and gourmet chocolate-covered fruit, now also offers delicious everyday treats like smoothies, fruit salads, and parfaits. As an Edible Arrangements franchisee, you get access to an established brand with 16 years of growth, over 80% brand recognition, and 1,200 locations worldwide. You'll benefit from know-how, support, and millions of visitors to the Edible Arrangements e-commerce platform. Discover why Entrepreneur Magazine named Edible Arrangements a top franchise and among their best of the best for 2015. Start your journey to sweet success as an Edible Arrangements franchise owner. Call 1-888-727-4258 or go to edible.com. That's 1-888-727-4258 or edible.com.